and welcome to Horrorspiria. My name is May, and today we have a very special guest. Her name is Amy Harris, and today we are featuring some of her research on the pod and talking about some of the films in her research, and I'll let her talk now. Hey, Amy.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. I know it's been a long time coming. We've been trying to organize it for a little bit, haven't we? So yeah, I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, this is my first time recording in a while too. So I'm happy you're breaking my cherry. All right, Amy. So please tell us, like, what do you do? Let the people know who you are.
Yeah, cool. Thanks. So I started out doing my PhD research at De Montfort University in 2019. That's based in Leicester. And I am looking specifically at contemporary women-directed horror. And for me, contemporary means anything from 2000 onwards, because there was nothing prior to that in the UK that was really directed by women. I'm looking specifically at British horror, just because of the scope of the PhD, it needs to be quite focused. But what I'm hoping is that this project will kind of be a stepping stone into not only looking at other roles that women have behind the camera, but also thinking about other areas that we can look at. You know, this research is something that is absolutely transnational, and I think that there's a lot of cool women scholars working in the same area. So it's nice to be able to see how some of the stuff I'm doing is kind of mapping across their stuff and vice versa.
Yeah, it's really awesome. And I know that so we swapped a couple of things, and I really loved your video essay and your reflection paper helped me really understand, like, why British women. And so one point that you made is that the scale of production is very different, like, versus American productions. Do you mind speaking a little to that, please?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks. The thing that you're referencing, so that was the video essay that I made for BAFTS. I think that was last year, possibly the year before. It all kind of blurs into one now. But yeah, the point that I was making there was that with British horror, it's really small scale. I mean, we just do not produce the same amount of films as Hollywood, which is kind of the natural counterpart that you would compare with. And that makes it interesting because the means of production are completely different. So it automatically invites you to look at small scale production. And when you get into that kind of small scale production, you get to see so much more creativity, I think, because you have filmmakers who just have got to experiment and think outside of the box. And that means that a lot of the films that I watch, you know, they are a little bit rough around the edges, but it's great because the filmmakers don't have the kind of financial pressures that you see in Hollywood. You know, they don't have to make something that has specific genre constraints. They just go for it. And a lot of the stuff you see is a real weird mix of horror, romance, and comedy. And it kind of just gets all smashed together. And I find that really exciting and really interesting, because not only does it offer us a new way of thinking about how horror is produced, but it also offers new ways of us thinking about the genre of horror itself and seeing how filmmakers with lower budgets can really push boundaries.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I kind of want to get into, like, some examples of what you're talking about, but one thing that I notice across these examples is that they're very intimate almost. I feel like contemporary British horror tends to have an intimacy that is not as easily found in American horror, but also, as you said, like, American horror tends to be, like, such a big umbrella that it's hard to make generalizations, though it's hard to make generalizations with British horror as well. So when we're talking about contemporary British horror via women filmmakers, like, what titles are we thinking of?
So, I mean, I started my research kind of from like 1972. So that's because Jane Arden directed a film called The Other Side of Underneath. Really awesome, quite trippy film, actually, very abstract, that looks at women's psychosis. And that, I think, has all of the kind of elements of a horror. And it kind of just got pigeonholed into being a feminist film that, you know, was too abstract for the mainstream. And even though the BFI, you know, picked it up, they've remastered it, there's some great reissues of it on DVD and Blu-ray now, it's still not really looked at in the realm of horror. So I kind of started there to think about, okay, so women are doing things, they're making stuff, but why is it not really being incorporated in other discussions about horror? Then I kind of jump forward because there's a bit of a gap, and it's the 1980s where you see Gabrielle Beaumont makes a film called The Godsend. And this is kind of like a slightly watered down British version of The Omen, like a lot less gory, real kind of focus on ideas around family structures. And again, kind of ignored, you know, not included in cycles of the possession horror. And I think, again, it's because it's just been overshadowed by the films that were coming out around a similar time, like The Omen. And then we have to jump forward again to the 1999 is Antonia Bird's Ravenous. And finally, that gets, you know, a bit of critical attention. You've got Roger Ebert writing about it and thinking around. I mean, one of the things he says is essentially, you know, this is a really great film for a woman. You know, she did a great job. And I thought, ace that it's been included finally in, you know, popular criticism, but also, you know, what? What's going on here? Why would she not be capable of doing that? And again, it's just like, okay, cool. So then what happens? And there's just a gap. And I just think to myself, why are there so many gaps in trying to find women-directed British horror? And it's not until we move, you know, much later on when we're thinking about sort of between 2015 up until now, really, you know, you've got things that are critically acclaimed and widely recognised, like Alice Lowe's Prevenge, Rose Glass, St. Maud. And finally, I think, okay, cool. There's a lot of work going on in scholarship that's trying to push this forward. There's a lot of kind of campaigns that are going on. You know, MUBI had their Women in Horror segment. Prano Bailey Bond's Censor came out, and that was quite successful. Again, you know, lots of people talking about women and women making horror. But it's all within the same kind of framework that we see when Roger Ebert was talking about Ravenous. It's like, oh, wow, these films are really good for women filmmakers. I didn't realize, you know, women could make films like this. And that's why I was kind of trying to think about, okay, what other methods can we apply to these films? How can we think about them beyond the fact that, okay, they're made by women, but what else are they saying? Like, is there a connection between these films that we can kind of pull out? And that was it, really. That was sort of the start of the research.
Yeah, I really love that context, and I feel like it's extremely helpful in thinking how, you know, women-directed British horror is different from women-directed national horrors, or even if the women part is an emphasis for something that needs to be explicit. Like, do we need to know that a woman directed Saint Maud or not? So I think there's a lot of really interesting questions there. Now, let me see. I think I have so many questions to ask you. I think, maybe this is an easier question to slide into first. Do you think that you've been able to identify some useful frameworks so far among more recent horror, like say from 2015 on, or is it more heterogeneous, or how has been that process?
So it's been quite tricky, actually, because when I started the PhD, I wasn't really sure what framework I was supposed to be using, because it was one of those things where I was kind of trying to build a framework alongside doing the project, and the film examples I'm looking at are still coming out. You know, when's my cutoff date going to be? All those kind of natural stresses. And Alison Pierce released the collection Women Make Horror, and that was so useful for me to think about what are the different approaches we could take. And then I met at CineXS, which is like a film festival conference hybrid, a director called Kay Pervaiz, who has made a film called Maya and also Black Lake. And we were having a chat, and something that she said was that what she just wanted to do was think about the emotional connection between the filmmaker and horror, and think about how you could use horror as something that was quite cathartic. And then it kind of clicked that what I'm actually seeing here is that a lot of these women are using the stories in horror as something that is cathartic. And I know that seems like it's a really obvious thing to do, and maybe an obvious pathway to go down, because there's so much around, you know, gender and emotion, but it makes sense. And there was a book that came out, I think it was called like The Affects of Horror or something, that looked specifically at women's work. I'll have to grab the title for you, but that again was all about like women's emotional attachments to horror when they're making horror, not as an audience member. So then that was the kind of framework that I started to use. So I was looking at, okay, how can we kind of group these films together? And a lot of them are looking at things like families, how families function, women's rights, women's like protection against, you know, predators, women's disruption of patriarchal standards, the kinds of things that, you know, you would probably expect, but then perhaps not as heavy-handed and obvious as you might think. You have to kind of digest the films more slowly. So Kay's work, Black Lake, you know, it's a very poetic film, and there's a lot of symbolism in there. And she, you know, she says she's a Jungian, she loves any kind of symbolism, and she really kind of pushed that in the film. And she said it's because I didn't want it to be that obvious. I wanted people to go away and think about the horror in the film and make those connections and get them to do the work rather than me kind of handing it to them on a plate. And I think she compared, you know, like the work of, say, Jordan Peele with Get Out. You know, it's a very obvious political allegory, fantastic movie, but you don't really have to put the work in to kind of get where it's going. And I think that that's the same in quite a lot of these British horrors that I've been looking at, especially as well because they're lower budget. They do have that kind of experimental edge where if you're watching it, you have to put the work in. You have to try and decode what the messages are and interpret it. And I really like that, because I think that maybe that's some of the reason I get maybe a little bored of the fairly formulaic horror blockbusters that come out. I love them, I enjoy watching them, I get the thrill, you know, as a horror fan, but I feel like, okay, you know, the message is quite clear to me. It means, you know, X means Y or whatever. And these films offer something a little bit different.
I love that you said that, because I probably have more frustration with American horror because it is so unsubtle. And sometimes I feel like it can even get to the point where it is using this very obvious literal and cinematic language to beat the spectator over the head to the point that it doesn't feel like horror to me. But a lot about horror sort of exploring the unknown. And I think that's definitely something I noticed across the films that you told me to watch, is like there's a lot of negative space to project onto almost. Do you think that there is a distinct Britishness, so to speak, across these films as well? Like, do you think that they're very, that perhaps only British women could make them? Or do you think it's more of like an at large women trend, womanly trends, or what do you think?
I think it's one of those things where, you know, it brings it back to that idea that when a woman makes a film, they're suddenly expected to talk for every woman. Right. And that you know, it is a little awkward because, you know, Kay's work on Black Lake has got a completely different message and approach to something like Suzanne Against Jelly Dolly. I mean, that was made in 2004, Jelly Dolly, and that they look at fairly kind of similar themes around violence towards women, right? But Jelly Dolly is actually, it is quite British, very 90s aesthetically. The sound, you know, it's it could be compared to something maybe like Human Traffic. It's got that kind of grittiness to it, and it focuses on British location as well. And there's a lot of attention given to the landscapes, which I really liked, and I recognise as someone who identifies, as a British woman. And then you've got Kay's work, where it's completely different. It's set in different regional areas of Pakistan. And she's kind of looking toward thinking around that community of women and talking to them. So even though it's a British film, there's no kind of British landscapes in it. There's no British music. They're completely different, but they're both addressing that same theme of, violence towards women. So again, I think it's really interesting because in some ways I feel like my research it tries to group these films together by theme, but then because they are independent and smaller scale, they're almost not really that comparable. And that's also what's exciting, because every film is quite different. But there's an amazing film called Temptation, and that is about a young girl who goes to a nightclub, has an incident with a taxi driver, and is resurrected by a group of female vampires who seek revenge on disgusting men, right? And that's very British in a sense that, she stumbles out of a nightclub, she has a kebab, a taxi picks her up, it's a black cab, so she's worried about how much money it's going to cost. And those kinds of things, I think, are quite culturally specific. But again, the message in that, it's essentially a rape revenge movie. So it can be compared to other rape revenge, but it's just the way that it's shot is more kind of culturally specific. But then there's other films that have a similar thing and they're completely different. So it's nice because there's a lot of variety, but as a researcher, it makes it quite confusing.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that in and of itself, what does it mean to be British, especially in a time of, heightened identity politics, that's like a heavy thing to weigh. And I love that you say that it's like, even when not in Britain, this is still like, this should be considered a British film. It's a British filmmaker. And I think that is, that's important caveat to mention. Now, I think you sort of answered this, but I think it's a good point to make a bit more explicit. Why contemporary British horror via women filmmakers? Like, why should we be looking at this subset? Like, what's so important about it?
Cool. I think one of the things, I should probably address actually is that, I identify as a female woman. I use she, her pronouns. I identify as British. And I think that is something that's important to note, because somehow you have to think about how you relate to your research. So a lot of it was, thinking around, well, I'm living in the moment where these women filmmakers who are similar to me are making films about issues that affect me on a day-to-day basis. So I have that personal connection with the kind of definitions that I chose. And all of the directors that I've spoken to so far have been really cool about talking about how they identify as well. And it's helped me to think about those kinds of assumptions that we make around women, really. We do kind of tend to lump women together as women directors, and we don't think about those kinds of nuances of how they identify and how their identity might play out in their filmmaking. So I did set quite limited definitions so that I could almost categorize these films. And then what I want to do is disrupt those categories and think about, what's the point of categorizing them in the first place? What do we gain from that? And personally, I don't think a lot. I don't really agree with categorizing, but I think it's a good place to start, because I almost feel like you need to get that basis so that you can then disrupt it. And then I chose British because the research that's been done on British horror is fantastic, but it really does have leanings towards Hammer. Hammer horror kind of overtook, I suppose, the horrors that were being produced in Britain right up until kind of the 80s, when it sort of declined. And I think that it feels a little dated you know, what, there's other stuff that has happened. There were other things that were going on while Hammer was around as well. And that's something that I think needs addressing. And I suppose a lot of the scholars that have written on British horror as well are male, and they tend not to branch out on the types of things that they're looking at. And someone who I think is absolutely fantastic is Johnny Walker. His book on contemporary British horror helped to move things away from looking at Hammer. And he really took into account, you know, what has happened since the heydays of Hammer. Where has horror gone? Why hasn't it been looked at? He took an industrial approach to his research as well, which is super helpful because, you know, you can see the stats of how things were, you know, declining essentially. But again, he didn't really take a gendered approach. And he's, you know, one of these scholars who is now trying to do the research to rectify that and think about what was he missing out on. And that's great. I think that's really cool. And a lot of the time, what drives this kind of research is that students that we have now are so in tune with the kind of nuances around identity and how a filmmaker's identity influences what's being made. They look a lot at indie cinema and they make assumptions about, you know, certain things like women don't make as many horror films. And they're right, but then they don't have the research to back that up. So part of what drives this is hoping that I can kind of contribute to a wider conversation and then that students can pick up on those things and continue to push that research forward and actually have reference material for it.
Yeah, what I think is really interesting about your approach so far is that you've both seemed to weigh like textual analysis of this film, of these films, along with like this global media industry approach, which I think is actually like something that is very underrated in horror studies. I think, you know, as you say, it's becoming more of a focus, I guess, in the more modern age, but it's still something that I don't feel like is talked about super often. So I guess, do you mind detailing a bit more of your methodology? Like, do you feel like you've been gaining more out of interviews or how has that whole process of like expanding your methodology and seeing how both textual analysis and interviews feed into each other, how that's enriched your research?
Yeah, thank you. That's such a cool question, actually, because I think the industry side of things actually came from when Shelley Cobb was my supervisor for my master's at Southampton. And she was really keen on me collecting stats for anything I did because she was like, you need to be able to see the numbers, you need to be able to quantify everything. And there's a great book as well, Invisible Women, that looks at you know, the gender gap in data. And it's only when you see the numbers in front of you that you start to think, oh, okay, now this textual analysis that I'm doing where I'm kind of trying to pull things out is actually quantifiable. It all makes sense. And one of the films that really helped me realize that the textual needs to go alongside an industry approach was Kate Shenton's Egomaniac, because that film is about a woman director trying to make a horror film in the UK and being told no, because, you know, she couldn't be trusted with a budget. She needed to perform in a certain way. It needed to be marketed in a certain way. There was content she couldn't include. And I thought, oh, wow, what she's actually doing there is this is like a self-reflexive piece. So she's taking all of these issues that, you know, are actually quantifiable and then putting them in the movie. Who else does that? And then when I started speaking to the directors like Kay, and I've spoken to a couple of others as well, Jacqueline Kirkham is one, they were like, yeah, it was so hard for me to make the film. I wasn't offered any money, or I was, and then it was pulled away from me. I had so many limitations placed on me, and that's come out in the filmmaking. So it almost seems like it's natural to put those two things together. And I think that's something that a lot of scholars are doing. So Shelley Cobb, Natalie Rayford and Linda Ruth Williams did the research into women's roles in media in the UK. And they looked from like 2000s or something up to 2015. And it was a huge project. And it was driven, you know, by their desire to collect the data so that when you do the textual analysis, you can say, and also there's the data that supports this. So that's kind of what I want to do. I want to put those things in place. So I don't really share the data I've collected with the directors. I let them tell me what they think, because they're the people who are actually involved in the productions, and they're going to know what it feels like to, you know, go up against a funding bid and not get it. Or, you know, I've had some of them tell me that they've essentially just ticked certain boxes because they know that if those boxes are ticked, they'll get some funding. They've explained like the nepotism in the industry, where they have to know so-and-so and so-and-so to get any funding for the film. The distribution is always really problematic, and a lot of these films go on Amazon and they're self-distributed. And I think, okay, yeah, cool, that kind of proves my point. And it's almost quite, it's disappointing to hear it, but it's gratifying as well, because I think the data that then is being collected clearly isn't just being pulled out of nowhere. You know, it's actually happening now, and there's still a lot of problems around things like, you know, production and distribution. And I always ask myself, and this was a really good question actually that Claire Monk asked me, with St. Maud, do you think that that would have had so much attention given to it if James Bond hadn't been delayed? Because it was the only thing in my local cinema that was on that was new. Because of the pandemic, James Bond had been delayed, right? So then would we have even recognised it? Would it have even had many showings? Probably not. Am I making a massive assumption? Maybe, but then is there data to suggest that it probably wouldn't? Yeah, there is. So those are the kinds of things that I find really interesting.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It doesn't exist in a vacuum. Like, all of these things matter. And and I really appreciate that you give that as much equal weighting as you do the content of the films, because even the content of the films is influenced by those more industrial factors. So sort of on that same note, I'm curious, like, so far throughout this process, and it's fine if you're sort of like repeating yourself, but what has been maybe the most surprising thing that you've learned, or maybe the most revelatory? Like, have you had any sort of like aha moments, or like, you know?
There have been a couple actually. One of them was that, I don't want to name the director, but I was talking to them and they said, can you please stop calling me a woman filmmaker? And I was like, oh, you know, I'm so sorry, that's what my project was on. And they were like, yeah, I really think you need to retitle your project. Like, I really think you need to stop referring to women filmmakers as women filmmakers. We're just filmmakers. And that was fairly early on in the project. And it was a really great moment, because I felt, you know, very embarrassed that I'd kind of made that faux pas. But it really helped me to think about that, you know, idea of saying around categories. So I was automatically, I went into this with that kind of framework of, okay, women make films, and because it's a woman, it's going to be different, and it's not going to be, you know, the same kind of stuff that we're seeing. And when that director said to me, yeah, you've got to stop that, I thought, okay, I need to start looking at these films through a different lens. So part of the process then was, what I did is I just consumed as much independent, lower budget British horror as I could possibly find. You know, I went to like a Loughborough Market, which is like this small town, and they have this DVD thing where they sell DVDs for 10p. So I just went through, and if it said UK on it, I just bought it. Just watched it all with absolutely no context as to who made it. And then I made a little grid and I thought, like, do I think this is directed by a woman? Yes or no? And why? Then went back and had a look. And a lot of the times I was wrong. And I thought, okay, cool. So I'm obviously going into this with a set of assumptions, which is going to skew my research massively. So that was a bit of an aha moment. And it was something that then I had to navigate. And it took me a little while really to think about, well, how do I navigate this? And then one of the ways that I was thinking about it was, okay, thinking about categorizing, and then what happens when we disrupt categories.
I think that's really beautiful, because I mean, it's a great point, even though it's clear for purposes of your research, you do need to categorize to a certain mm-hmm. extent. But I guess that sort of did come back to something that I said way earlier on, where it's like, are we supposed to know from off the frame? Like, is this a woman director and is it necessary? And that sort of ties into a question that I was going to ask anyway, which is like, it was more towards about like your spectatorship, you know, as you said, like you're the British woman who is interested in horror. Like you're sort of like the perfect spectator for this whole project to begin with. Do you feel like, especially throughout the examples that you've mentioned, do you feel like there is a difference in the frame itself? Do you think that you've been able to sort of pick up on that, or do you think that it is sort of just like it maybe there's too much weight given to gendered framing and gendered gazing? Like, do you feel like you've been able to distinguish anything?
I think this is going to sound like such a cop-out, but I genuinely think it's a bit of both. So I was invited to co-direct CineXS last year, and part of the reason that happened was because I was looking at women, and they wanted me to use that kind of lens to pick out some of the selections that we had for the film festival portion. And I did notice that some of the ways that I was receiving the films was different to some of the ways that my co-workers were. And one film really stuck out to me. It was a film about trafficking, and I hated it. I thought it was so uncomfortable. Reason being was it didn't have the budget to be able to execute that kind of heavy material that it was looking at. And a couple of my colleagues were like, yeah, no, this film's great. You know, it's really pushing the boundaries. And I was like, as a woman watching this, there was no point in this where I felt comfortable. And it wasn't a case of the film trying to make me feel uncomfortable. It was it was just the way I was receiving it, 'cause I just felt the performances were quite insincere. Like some of the production values were, you know, borderline comical. And I just felt that it didn't really appreciate the seriousness of the subject matter. And I think that my attitude toward the film was completely different to other people's, because I guess it's something that I've researched and I've looked at in quite a lot of detail. And I have seen a lot of other films that have that kind of subject matter. It's not a British film, but there's an incredible film called Joy. And that looks at trafficking and sex workers. And that's handled really beautifully, very sensitively. It's also one of those films where the director let the actors kind of get to know each other. And a lot of it, you know, a bit like Girlhood, they got to know each other. And then she just filmed observationally, you know, as these conversations played out. This film was not like that at all. And I think my viewing experience, because it was so different, we didn't screen it at the festival. And I think it was an example of what you're getting at here, where my kind of identity, my position changes the way that a film can be viewed. And I think it was also a case of me raising the point that some of the subject matter that we're looking at, maybe it can only be handled by people who have those experiences. You know, we talk a lot about how directors, you know, who don't identify at all with the subject matter are quite happy to exploit that subject matter and make a film. And I think it's the same when you're looking at contemporary British women's horror. I think you need a British woman, you know, someone who identifies that to look at that subject matter, rather than, you know, someone who's completely random and removed from it. And then the audience, if they can relate, will probably have more of a relationship to the media than somebody who, again, doesn't identify that way. Does that make sense? I feel like that's
so funny. It makes perfect sense, actually. Okay. The way that I sort of relate to that as you were talking, especially given the example that you use, is I really have like a problem with rape revenge movies. Mm-hmm. And I actually almost have more of a problem when women direct them, not because I don't think it can be done, but half or most of the time when it's done, I'm like, how is the exploitation of the body, of the experience, not the same as when a man has directed this? It still feels exploitative. But then I see other examples, like I think of Lynn Ramsey's You Were Never Really Here. I think of I think of Gigi Saul Guerrero's Culture Shock, which is definitely more of a traditional horror. And there's the rape scene in there, but the framing is handled entirely differently, so that the trauma aspects are emphasized, not the exploitation of the act itself. Yeah. And sometimes I think I find frustration, especially as there's more of a push of women in horror. There's this thing where it's like, oh, well, you know, if it's a woman's issue, a woman knows how to direct it, and there is no way that that can fail. And it's like, no, like women can also mess that up. So I really appreciate that you say that distinction, because it's not just like, oh, this is a woman's film, make a woman's film. Because at the end of the day, and I have sort of been theorizing around this with like queer horror, like women authors, queer authors, of course they want to make women's films, queer films, but they also want to do films outside of that. It's not just stuck to this pigeonhole. And I think a sensitivity and an empathy tends to be more common with women filmmakers, for sure. Like thinking of the two examples, two of the examples that have been sort of the most popular that we've mentioned are like Censor and Saint Maud. How do you feel about those films overall? Let's talk a little bit about them.
Oh, well, I love them. I think they're fantastic. I saw Saint Maud twice in the cinema, just because I thought it was, I don't know, I feel like it's one of those films you really have to see on the big screen to get the full effect of the ending, because it is so visceral, and there's such a beautiful contrast between, you know, the saturation of the fire and then the bleakness of the landscape behind the girl. Censor, I really enjoyed. I thought it was quite a fun film. I thought it was really great at capturing that kind of oppressiveness of the video nasty era when everything was being banned. I thought, yeah, this is fab. But neither of those films did I really think were specific to women or women's issues, right? And the same I felt about Raw. The director of Raw has said, you know, I'd stop pigeonholing me into saying everything that I'm doing is about women and women's issues. It's not. I just wanted to make a cool, gory cannibal film. And and that does come up again. Like, there are plenty of examples of British horror where it's just like The Godsend, although it does focus quite a lot on the family and the relationship with the demonic child and the mother. I don't know if I necessarily say it's anything about like maternal instinct or those kinds of buzzwords that we attach to women. I would just say that it's a film about possession. And because we read it next to something like The Omen, we automatically think, right, okay, a woman's directed this, therefore they must have done something different. Okay, it focuses more on the family. Okay, so, you know, it must be about the woman's relationship to her family and her children. And sometimes I think, actually, I think the director saw an opportunity to make a possession horror because that was popular at the time, went for it, didn't quite have the budget to do all the cool gory stuff. So we've got a bit more of emphasis on what the family are doing day to day. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's, you know, a woman's horror.
Yeah, totally. So sort of related, just because now I'm curious, has there been any films so far in your research process that has either surprised you or been like a hidden gem that you have been dazzled by?
Yeah, I suppose there's a film called Grave Matters by Amy Stevenson, and that was so hard to get hold of. That was a hidden gem. I just couldn't find it anywhere. And I had a chat with Mike Simpson, who's done a book on like urban British horror. And his books are great because they're very much survey work. So it's a collection of his reviews from the time that he was writing for, you know, like Fangoria and stuff like that. But he had a copy of it, and I, you know, it was one of those things that's like, yes, I finally got it. It was a good film, but I was like, huh, it took me so long to find this, and I don't know what to do with this now because I don't know where to position it in anything else. And unfortunately, you know, it was very sad. The director passed away so very shortly after making the film. So that's part of the reason the film isn't widely distributed, because she was never really able to distribute it. And that was one of those things where it took me ages to find it. I found it, I watched it, and I still don't know what to do with it, because it's not like anything else that I've really seen. And I'm really limited about where I can show it because of, you know, there's a few issues around screenings and things. But what I would love to do would, you know, be put on a screening of it somewhere and just get audience reaction to the film, because it's about a woman who she's cheesed off with her husband for a number of reasons. So she kills him, buries him in the garden, and then he comes back. So it's a great film. Lots of supernatural elements, lots of ideas around women's power, lots of ideas around, you know, physically disrupting the patriarchy. But it's just such a random film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I've never heard of it. But I do love like those little discoveries. I think that that's sort of half the, because I also deal with very incomplete archives in Latin America. And so I feel like every few weeks I'm finding a film, or I'm reading about a film that I can't find. And then when you, if you eventually do find it, it's like, oh my God, this piece of crap. Even though in your sense, it was much more optimistic. For me, it's usually like, oh, I see why this was never like, this was buried. So I guess to like sort of begin to wrap up a little bit, let me think about this question. Where is your research taking you now? Like, where do you feel like your research is guiding you right now, possibly for like this year?
Well, I'm on an interruption at the moment. So last year I interrupted because I just felt like the research wasn't going in any particular direction, because it's one of those things where I'm dealing with issues around identity, small scale production. I'm also thinking about national context, and there's so many different paths I could have taken that I'm in that stage where I need to funnel it into a tangible thesis, and I'm not there yet. And I wanted to focus more on talking to directors and kind of getting their viewpoints. With the research, I'm not supposed to include any interviews in my thesis. So I thought by taking a year out and removing myself from that kind of university affiliation, I can go off and do what I want, have all that knowledge, and then come back and go at it again. So I'm on a bit of a break from the actual writing portion of it, but I have written a chapter with Kay Pervaise about her film Black Lake. So that's coming out hopefully, I think, the middle of this year, which is really cool because it's a collection about evil women just in general across all genres and mediums. And it's really awesome to have something like published together. And there's another director, Tanya, who was at CineXS a couple of years ago, and she said about looking at creating a module together that she can deliver around issues of women and race in America. So completely removed from Britain, but it's cool because it's thinking about, okay, what can I do to actually start getting this work out here, and then hopefully getting more people come and talk to me about their films rather than me approaching them. So I'm in what the universities call the impact stage of the of the PhD, right? I'm thinking about how can I actually take what I know so far, apply it to real world scenarios, actually talk to people and get people involved in it, and then go back and write it into something that I think would hopefully be a bit more useful, because I don't want this to be a thesis that is kind of like, yeah, cool, that's done, what can I do next? I kind of want to carry on, and then I want to think about, okay, what other roles have women had in the UK in British horror behind the camera, and then almost like in my head I see it sort of like a series. So the actual writing portion, I'm not writing, but I hope that, you know, I think September I'm going to go back and actually start writing stuff. But at the minute, it's very much just experimenting with the different ways that you can do research, I suppose.
No, yeah, and I think that is almost more exciting than the writing itself, though I am really excited once you do eventually write this. But I mean, I think one thing that I've really learned from this conversation, maybe even more so than like when I first perused your materials, though they're very helpful, like, because I didn't really know much about this topic at all, is that it almost seems like the industry study is where it's going and where it's more like revelatory, because as you say, it's maybe even somewhat problematic to be like, well, these are the connections I'm drawing across textual analysis. But if you actually, you know, prioritize, I guess, like how the filmmaker experience or the process and whatnot, and how that connects to spectatorship, I think that you get a lot of really interesting questions that can just go throughout the rest of your career and also inspire other people to take that up. So I think that that's really exciting and cool.
Yeah, thank you. That's what I really hope. So like at the moment where I'm the academic coordinator for a course at a college in Leicester, and you know, one of the reasons they hired me is because it's all guys that teach on this film course. And they were like, we want a bit of variety. So I was like, okay, cool. And I looked at their content and I was like, first off, where are all the women in the stuff that you're teaching? You know, you've got a whole section here on editing and all I'm seeing is D.W. Griffith. Like, are you okay?
Really? Over there? Why are you guys doing D.W. Griffith? I get it sort of over here, but no.
No, just no. It's a flat no from me.
Yeah,
so I was like, okay, so, you know, we need to look at you know, women's pioneering work in film and television history. It's a starting point. So that's what excites me, because I think, like you said, this should hopefully be a starting point. And if anything comes from it, I'd like other people to read my work and then just start causing disruption everywhere. That's the goal.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, I hope that somehow contribute to this disruptive thing that we're all doing with research.
Totally. I think that that's the most exciting part. Okay. So final question, just because I'm curious, I feel like you may know, is there any film this year that you're like really looking forward to?
I don't know really, because I saw The Yellow Wallpaper at CineXS, and that was fantastic, because I love the story anyways. I think it's great. It's about a woman who's kind of, she's trapped in a room, isn't she? And she kind of forms this relationship almost with the wallpaper. She thinks it's talking to her, and then it goes from there. And the film was just, it was just beautifully shot. I really enjoyed it. And I'm excited to see when that's more widely distributed. I don't know if CineXS, we're going to pick it up for our Amazon channel. If we do, fab, but I really want to see that in the cinema, because I think that that's one of those things where it's the director's, I think, first feature length that's been, you know, approved for festival distribution. So it would be ace to see that in a cinema.
Totally. Man, I didn't even know that was like a thing. That's definitely something to look forward to. Have you been to a cinema yet?
Went to the cinema first week of Jan. I went to go and see the new Matrix film. I just feel like you've got to see them in the cinema to get that, you know. You know, it was a bit weird. So yeah, Matrix was what I saw, which I don't know. It was okay. It was fine. I got what I wanted from it, you know.
I saw that one at home, even though a small part of me did want to go see it in theater. So it was like, it's one of those things where you definitely have to gauge. Like the last thing I saw was Scream, and that was definitely worth it.
Yeah, I'm hoping to see that actually. I heard a lot of people saying it offers a lot to think about.
Yeah, I would say that. And I had fun. I really did. I had fun. And I'm actually like, I feel like... Now everyone says that they're a massive Scream fan, which is exciting. But I also feel like I was carrying the flag by myself for a long time. All right. Well, thank you so much, Amy. This is so helpful. I feel like I learned so much more throughout this conversation, and I can't wait for other people to also gain a lot from it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on here.